If you're a soccer fan shopping for gear, the place to go is Soccer 90. All the leagues, clubs, national teams, you'll find it at Soccer 90. See it up in Frisco, next door to the National Soccer Hall of Fame. Shop online at soccer90.com. Soccer 90, love it, live it, wear it. Good.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Always relegated, never promoted. Andy Swift and Peter Welton.
Eriksen looks like lasting the 90 again. A teasing cross, and that is the delivery they've been waiting for. Ivan Toney strikes again. You cannot leave him alone for a moment. Brentford explodes, and Toney finds the back of the net. Christian Eriksen with the conjuring trick. Toney with the finish.
Hi, P1s, and welcome to today's Kick Around. Saturdays, 2 to 4, here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310. The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks some soccer and all that implies. Hi, you can find us also on our website, thekickaround.com. Hello, it is me, Peter. And also in this broadcast studio of awesomeness, it is noted soccer expert and foodie, Andy Swift.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Despite Man United being my natural rival, my team's natural rival, I really like it when they win because you come in with that extra pep, that nice smile. You're ready to do the show. So I guess I'm happy that your boys won and spanked Tottenham today.
It was not a spanking.
No, it was not.
It was, it was not a spanking. Hold on. Just keep that thought tight in your little lap for a second so I can preview what's coming up the rest of the show. Because the situation going on with Chelsea gets more and more nutty by the minute, and I literally mean by the minute, we have called in the authorities on this stuff. Lars Siverston will join us live from London here in a short bit just to talk about Chelsea and all the stuff going on with Roman Abramovich and the sanctions and the English government. It is nutso. We'll also talk to Tyler Kern, who will help us figure out what's going on with Ricardo Pepi at Augsburg in the Bundesliga.
Is he still there?
I don't know. And how that then ties into the U.S. men's national team, which has coming very quickly around the corner, a very important game in Mexico.
Who do they play next? Mexico and
Mexico. In Mexico, and how the Pepi situation may relate to all of that. And, of course, we'll also talk about that crazy game at midweek, Real Madrid coming back to beat PSG and allow all of us just to have another hearty laugh at PSG's expense. So there, we'll do that all today here on your very special episode of the Kick Around. First off, Andy, did you get up and watch the big game early this morning? The most really,
sure. If you're gonna classify it as the most important one of the day, I'll take it. But yes, I was up watching Liverpool.
me.
I'm not gonna say comfortably walk through that game.
That was the most snoozy game of soccer.
It wasn't snoozy.
It was, and
no, I thought Brighton early on looked like they came to play. Look, Brighton is not a bad team.
They've lost 6 in a row,
but they never made Liverpool feel uncomfortable. Even though I think Liverpool had a subpar game.
All right,
how's that?
Okay, fair enough.
Yep.
We should start the show, though, with the big game of the day, the real honest big game of the day, which was at Old Trafford, who are coming off the humiliation of what happened last weekend against Man City, which was brutal in every way, shape, and form.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about that game, not to bring it up.
Because
I think it sets the stage for what's coming.
I agree.
Today. And that was United getting spanked by City in a way we haven't seen in a while, especially when those two play. United had success
at City
over the last few years. So it was a surprising scoreline, 5-0. But
I don't even remember.
But also
it was so bad.
You might have lost track after 3. Part of the, and it could have been more. It was that bad. Part of the storyline though was that Ronaldo because of quote injury.
Yeah, there's so much mystery around that.
Wasn't on the list, not even on the bench.
Okay.
But didn't even show up to watch the game. He flew to Portugal.
And nobody knew he was doing it, and right. There's all this drama.
So this whole week is all about that.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's why I find what happened today all the more fascinating.
Right.
Because we find out very late that Bruno Fernandes is now not available through illness, mm-hmm. but Ronaldo has returned. Now, I want to go back to a conversation that you and I had at the beginning of the season when Manchester United signed Ronaldo, and you were like, man, that's going to be good for you. And I kept saying,
I know.
I'm not so sure it's right. a good thing, because if you read any, because at that, well, in that particular time, I translated this article out of a Portuguese football section or something. No, I don't know Portuguese.
Okay.
So the translation mm-hmm. is, your mileage may vary, mm-hmm. but it was making the very clear case that for the Portuguese national team, there are a lot of people that truly believe that Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo cannot play on the same field at the same time.
Yeah. And that wasn't your biggest worry about Ronaldo. I think it was, is he going to be able to press the way United and Premier League teams press?
Well,
that was your bigger concern.
This was one of many concerns
yeah,
I had. But, so, if Ronaldo is missing in a 5-0 loss to Man City, mm-hmm. but then Bruno is missing in a home win over Tottenham that Ronaldo scores a hat trick,
mm-hmm. we haven't mentioned this yet.
Do we now know something that we didn't know a few weeks ago?
And not only that, the 5-0 loss, Bruno did not have a good game.
Bruno hasn't played well in a while, in my opinion.
True.
And so there, I do believe, and by the way, yes, Manchester United did beat Tottenham today 3-2. It was a very good game, back and forth. Tottenham came from behind twice to tie the game, but Ronaldo just did Ronaldo things. It was...
Yeah.
He's 37 years old, and it's funny, especially because we'll talk about the PSG game later on the heels of Karim Benzema scoring a hat trick for Real Madrid at the age of 34 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not quite Ronaldo age, but up there.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. You're the neutral in this. You talk about it.
I think Ronaldo's performance today was amazing. I thought it was a great game as well. For a neutral, I really wasn't rooting for one team or the other. I thought a tie didn't help either one, and I knew that United more than Spurs had to really go for the win. But Ronaldo is just amazing, and it's almost like he was uber focused today. He put the team on his shoulders. He could have scored another couple, right? He came mm-hmm. close another couple times. I don't know, I was thinking, man, does he know the GOAT of the NFL is in the stands watching him play? And like, I think Ronaldo probably care less that Brady was in the stands. But Brady, I was thinking, was watching, who some argue is the GOAT of soccer, the greatest of all time in soccer. And he was there to watch Ronaldo do that. And if you're going to go and like, I'm going to go watch that game and I'm going to go see it in person and I hope Ronaldo does something. Boy, did he deliver.
He did. And the first opening goal is Eric Dier not closing Ronaldo down, which, by the way, this is a funny part of the conversation because as I'm watching the game, McTominay's not healthy. Modric is playing in that position. And I was getting a little concerned with the fact that when United had the ball, Modric was playing as the kind of guy holding back. Mm-hmm. And if United had to transition defensively, Modric is too slow to chase people down. And I was kind of hoping that Fred would take up that position because at least he can cover ground better than Modric.
Yeah.
But Fred played such a sweet little flick ball to Ronaldo. And Fred was, and this is one of these weird growing things in this Ragnick era, is a lot of the Manchester United fans really are starting to believe that Fred is starting to show his qualities under Ragnick you hadn't seen previously.
Yeah, you're one of the bigger critics of Fred.
Yes.
Do you feel the same way? Do you feel he's starting to, I don't know, show
There are things that are still, but he still turns the ball over too much in my mind. He does look better in this position, a little further up the field. He played a tremendous game today, and I thought Modric played a tremendous game today.
Yeah.
You know, Modric finally played a ball. I've been trying and yelling at my television to encourage my club to do more often, which is play the ball over the top and let people run onto it.
Oh, really?
Which
Kick
was the
run.
Second? Which was this? Well, no, the short ones, like the one for the second goal.
Right.
That's exactly the type of attacking sequence that I don't think United does enough.
Yeah.
And it worked in their favor that time. So, look, it all worked out very well. What's interesting is looking at how this affects the table, and it also, now looking from Spurs' point of view, who have been this very weird light switch of on and off, I'm sure Spurs fans are super frustrated by that result today, but maybe they're not surprised. I don't know.
No, I don't feel like Spurs played a poor game either today. Do you? I mean, I think they countered relatively well. They had opportunities. They got a bit lucky in that their second goal was an own goal. By the way, we have to talk about Maguire, and he's not been great either.
No, I mean,
he was okay today. He had that little bit of a brain fart, I guess. Well,
let me ask you a question. On the Maguire own goal,
yeah.
Do you feel like that is a proper use of the offside rule?
Yeah, so I was going to ask you the same question. To me, when the ball touches the foot and leaves the foot of the player passing the ball into the middle,
mm-hmm.
right, to the player that was behind Maguire, the Spurs player that was behind Maguire, that player was off.
Right.
To me, that should be an offside call.
I agree with you on this. Because now, if that player had been outside of the post, like out of the frame or farther away,
right.
But the fact that he's literally standing dead center right. and all he has to do is tap the ball in, I don't know why anybody thinks the rule should not be used there, because Maguire's only other option is just to stop play and let the ball go and assume that they decide not to call it offside.
And you can't take that chance, and you don't know. Maguire doesn't know if he came from behind an offside position into an offside position. So Maguire can't take that chance, but Maguire reacts to that cross because that player is there.
He assumes that player is
so
there.
So what is the explanation? I mean, you are kind of the referee.
The explanation is that we have had this conversation multiple times over the years, which is there is no good explanation. It's just that if a defender plays the ball and it comes off of them, whatever happens, even if it goes to another player, it then suddenly now is not an offside position.
Well, then I don't agree with that rule.
And you and I have agreement, Fred Durst would say agreeance.
Shocking.
On that matter. It was a good showing by United today. I do think there is something in between the lines, as you read about this, about Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo the field at the same time.
It's not a conspiracy here that Bruno was out as part of a design plan.
No. All I'm saying is that when United has struggled this season, mm-hmm. I think there are clear visual clues as to why those two guys mm-hmm. complicate things for a team. And in the article that I was reading same team, and part of it is because if you're trying to play within a structure and a system, having just one of those guys is complicated because they're kind of their own system unto themselves.
Right, yep.
They don't, unlike
systems are built around them.
Yeah. Remember, we talked about the fact that Bruno Fernandes would never make it on a Klopp or Pep Guardiola team
mm-hmm.
because he just doesn't play within a set system. He's his own thing, mm-hmm. and he would drive those guys nuts, Klopp and Pep. But in United's system, when you add Ronaldo into the mix, now you got two guys that are playing their entirely own systems. And so part of the 5-0 loss to City was the fact that Fernandes, frankly, just isn't playing well right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And part of the thing today is that Ronaldo benefited from, I think, Bruno not being there.
Well, when we talk about PSG a little bit later in the show,
mm-hmm.
we're going to talk about that very same dynamic because of the front three they have. I think there's some similarities there.
Yeah, so United do get the win today. That does give them a little bit of a buffer, at least against West Ham and Spurs. That now does put a 5-point gap between the two of them. But Arsenal is right behind United, 2 points behind, but they also have 4 games in hand. And we'll talk more about the Gunners here a little bit later on the show. When we come back, it's time to talk about Chelsea, and we're going to bring in the big guns, Lars Sivertsen, next here on The Kick Around. Welcome back to The Kick Around. A little bit later in the show, we'll all sit around and have a hearty laugh over PSG mucking it up once again. But we're short on time, and we have much to discuss, and we needed a big gun to help us sort this out. So live via the internet, it is our good friend from London, the great Norwegian, Lars Sivertsen. Come in, Lars.
Hello, everyone. How's it going?
Hey, Lars.
Excellent. You okay, Lars? Are you mopey
it's been
about...
It's been an exciting week, I'll put it that way. And there's also something happened today which we don't need to talk about.
Okay.
Okay. I won't rub it in, Lars. Sorry, my friend.
Thank
I know
you
you're
very much. That's very kind of you.
I know you're a Spurs fan. It's okay. All right, Lars. So let's try to set this table and explain to everybody what it means when the English government has decided to place sanctions on Chelsea. And then you're starting to read things like that they've shut down their credit cards and they can't sell tickets. And what in the world is going on at Chelsea?
So Roman Abramovich has been added to the list of individuals whom the United Kingdom have decided to sanction because of his links with the Kremlin. He's been in the sort of documentation that have been published from the UK government. He's been described as having had a close relationship with the Kremlin for a long time and with Vladimir Putin, and that he's benefited from that relationship, and because of that, all his assets in the UK has been frozen. Now, we're talking about it on this show because one of those assets is Chelsea Football Club. Now, what would typically happen when a company like that is effectively frozen, you know, activity would cease. You know, no more incomings, no more outgoings. You know, the business stops. But it's very difficult to do that with a football club, mid-season in particular. You can't just suddenly stop everything. It becomes very, very difficult. And also because a football club isn't just a company, obviously. It is a cultural and community asset. So because of that, the government has given Chelsea a license to continue operating, albeit under very strict restrictions. So they're allowed to pay salary, money that's on its way in because of previously agreed things like TV income and stuff like that, they can receive. But they're basically not allowed to make any new contracts with anyone. They're not allowed to provide any services. They're just allowed to do the bare minimum to be able to play games right now. Which means, like you said, they are not allowed to sell new tickets because that is a form of contract that you enter into with the consumer, right? So you can't sell any fresh tickets, you can't sell any merch. But people who have season tickets can go to games because that's a previously sort of arranged commercial relationship between the fan and the club. So they've basically been frozen but allowed to continue just about so that they can complete their games this season.
So without the ability to bring in new revenue, they're basically functioning with their cash reserves at the moment. But you said that they still have some revenues coming in, like the TV rights fees that they get, you know, throughout the year. Is that enough to cover the current expenses through the end of the season, or is there fear that they're just going to run out of cash? Because
no
the player salaries are high, obviously, right?
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So Chelsea is a team that loses money pretty much every year because their outgoings are higher than their incomings in a regular season, right? So the running cost to the wage bill is huge, and we don't really know how much cash reserves they have right now. So there are real question marks about how long this can actually go on for. And it's been suggested that Chelsea will try to maybe negotiate with the government has just decided to say the restrictions that we're allowed to operate under are too tight. Like, we can't go on like this for too long. For instance, they're only allowed to spend up to £20,000 on travel arrangements for away games, which could be a real issue when they have to do away games in the Champions League and stuff, because it's not enough for the private jet they usually go on. It's a real issue with stuff like that. The question is, no one really knows. I've been asking around, and I've asked people who are smarter than me, and then no one seems to know what actually happens if they do run out of cash, because usually when a football team runs out of cash here, they're put under administration, which means an administrator comes in and just starts selling off anything that has value so that the creditors can get their money. That's what usually happens, right? But how can that happen if they're under sanctions and it's not legally possible to sell anything and bring money into the club? Like, no one knows what actually happens there. I'm starting to suspect that the government don't really know. So I suspect what will happen is that a sale is going to have to be pushed through pretty soon.
All right. So is it not? So obviously, if you're a Chelsea fan, you're freaking out because you've enjoyed 20 years of Roman Abramovich just essentially pouring literally millions or actually billions of dollars into this club. The club actually owes him a debt of $2 billion because he's been putting in all this money so they could go buy all these players and build the facility and all the stuff that he's been doing that has made Chelsea go from kind of a upper mid-tier club to a top-tier club and the current reigning European champions of the world. And now suddenly that is in danger of all going away. But with this news this week that they have essentially separated him and said, you will not make any money from the sale of the club. Should that be in some way a silver lining to fans? Because now it's likely the club won't sell for $2, $3, $4 billion, but maybe at a more reasonable price that would allow any purchaser to actually put a real business plan to kind of continue with some sort of positive financial structure.
That's a really interesting point. And it's another area where, again, we're in such uncharted territories, we won't really know. I should add to what I said earlier. So under the current sort of temporary license they've been given to keep operating, you know, a sale is not permissible. So they can't currently be sold. But the government has said that they would be willing to let that happen and grant them a new type of license if they were satisfied that Roman Abramovich doesn't benefit at all from a sale. So who actually gets the money? What that does to the bidding process? We don't have a lot of clear answers to that. But it's a very fair point you make. Whoever buys it is probably going to end up paying less than they would have if Abramovich could sell it in his own time and for the money he wanted. I think that's a fair assumption. And that would maybe make it easier for whoever comes in to fund it. But I think you have to ask again, are there people out there who could feasibly buy Chelsea and run the club the way Abramovich has, which is losing, you know, millions and millions of dollars every year? Because there aren't that many people around who are happy losing that kind of money on having a football club. Yeah. Abramovich, I guess, was, because I guess he enjoyed it. But running this club as a business is tricky.
Unless it's a Saudi or the Saudis, some, you know, like a nation state or another oligarch, which won't be the case, you're probably going to get a setup like the Liverpool owners or the Man United owners or a rich European. And those are fine. They can spend a lot of money. But the reality is for Chelsea fans, I think, that the setup they had with it's just not going to happen again.
The good times are over.
That ship has sailed.
Well, the good times might be over. It could also be that you get I mean, someone like Todd Boehly has been involved, who, of course, has ownership stakes in American sports franchises. And it is plausible. I mean, the upside, if you're a Chelsea fan, I guess what you're hoping for is that someone who comes in who runs the club very well. Like, I mean, FSG haven't put a lot of money into Liverpool, but they've run the organization very, very smartly and taken the club back to the top. It is possible. But you have some challenges with Chelsea, which is their stadium isn't that big, so that's a limitation there. And you know, but what they have is a very good academy. They have a very good playing squad right now. You might have to try to cut some wages, but you are an established Champions League club, so there's potential for someone, for a very smart ownership group to run this club very well. It can be done. It's just not easy.
Right, and what I mean by the good times is the fact that you had an owner that was willing just to dump whatever he needed into it and fire whatever manager and pay that manager millions of dollars and go get another great manager.
It was $2 billion in debt. That new ownership group is not going to incur
not gonna be
$2 billion
in debt. That fact that Andy, say that again, please.
Yeah, $2 billion in debt. $2 billion. He gave away $2 billion.
Yeah, it's wiped out.
He realizes he's not getting that back. I mean, there's basically no way.
That's the overage, you know, between expenses, players, and the realities of how you run a club and what can come in.
Right. And
the delta
was
$2 billion.
Right, but that also is part of the reason why I think that the decision to cut him out and say, you're never getting any of this money, Mr. Abramovich, is so critical as a Chelsea fan of, like, maybe there is a way out of this. Because if I'm going to go buy that club for $1 billion, my path to being more successful financially is way easier than if I had to pay $3 or $4 billion for it. Right, Laura? You see what I'm saying?
I see the point you're making, and it's a fair point. I guess I would be surprised if there isn't an owner out there who will, like you say, continue to fund. But the point that's worth making, part of the reason, I mean, some of this has been self-inflicted by Abramovich. The reason he's had to pump so much money into the club is that he did insist on firing people as soon as things didn't go right.
They weren't able
to build, like, what Liverpool are doing, for instance, who really should be the model for everyone. of having a club culture, of having a structure, of putting people in place who are good at their jobs and letting them work over a period of time. And if you have a season where you don't win the league, it's fine because you believe in what you're doing. That wasn't possible because at Chelsea, you know, almost every manager who started the season as a Chelsea manager and didn't win the league got fired. I mean, over two decades, that just that's what happened. And that becomes expensive because you have unnecessary turnover of players. You have to pay these people to go away. All things becomes very, very expensive. So maybe, I mean, if you're looking for silver linings, again, if you're a Chelsea fan, yes, it's been a loss-making company for a while, but maybe if it's run smarter, it's more viable for them.
Okay, so we've got very little time left. One kind of last question, which is how do you, or what are you hearing and discussing with your friends over there in London? Do you feel like how is the rest of the season going to play out in terms of how they finish in the Premier League, how they finish in Champions League? And then ultimately, what does this mean for their rather deep collection of players going into the next season?
I think all of that is kind of up in the air because I can't see any other solution really than a sale happening quite soon. And then the answer to all of those questions would depend on who comes in and what kind of people they are and what they want to do. I don't know exactly what kind of cash reserves they have, but I would be surprised if they were able to just run the club under the way it's been stipulated now until the summer. I think they might run out of money before that. I think players might have to take wage cuts. I mean, that might be a way to do it. And maybe players will be allowed to walk away. I mean, all those sort of things. But there are so many unanswered and maybe unanswerable questions, like I explained, the administrative stuff. How that even works out. The only rational solution here, I think, is a quick sale, and I suspect we'll see that in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Any prediction about where they now? Does your prediction of where they finish in the Premier League change at all for you? Does this affect the players?
It will affect them mentally, but you know, if you look at the table, there is a gap between them and the other teams who are squabbling for the last top four place. And I know they won today, but it's hard to be too convinced by Manchester United. They're very inconsistent. Arsenal have been winning games, but they've got a thin squad. You know, Tottenham keep tripping themselves up. So I think if there are stronger challenges behind them, that could be an issue. But they do have a lead on those. And even though there's disruption, I would expect them to claim that third spot in the end.
All right. Lars, should we feel sorry for the Chelsea fan?
No. I mean, absolutely not. I mean, the reality is they've had two decades where the club has had success that they would never have had if they didn't receive millions and millions of funding from a man who's very closely, or certainly has been very closely linked with Vladimir Putin. And they've had a lot of fun for two decades, and they're in a great starting point now. I mean, the club was in real financial trouble when he bought it. So it's been two good decades for them, and if they get the right owners, the future could still be very bright. So, you know, it's not that bad.
All right. That's our very good friend, the amazing Lars Sivertsen, live from London. Thanks, man. We appreciate you popping on and throwing all that good information our way.
Anytime, sir.
Thanks, Lars.
All right, when we come back, we'll get back into the other results of the day, including look who won again next here on The Kick Around. This is The Kick Around, brought to you by our very good friends at Soccer 90 and Soccer90.com, the most excellent place to go find your soccer gear. Coming up a little bit later in the show, Tyler Kern is going to join us, and it's going to start off as a conversation about the Bundesliga and then evolve into a conversation of U.S.-Mexico, which is just around the corner. And I'm very, very, very nervous about that.
You're nervous about the window. More than
I'm nervous
game.
About the whole window.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks again to Lars Sivertsen for coming on and talking about the Chelsea situation. By the way, don't think it's gone unnoticed that Chelsea tomorrow, as part of a large group of Premier League games, plays Newcastle United at Stamford Bridge. And the irony is not lost on that. By the way, if you have not read Barney Ronay's article in The Guardian that came out, I think, yesterday, specifically about how the concerns of Abramovich's ownership has turned into a suspension, and then if you were just to replace the words Chelsea with Newcastle, suddenly it turns into this whole different light, and it's a fascinating read. it's a little bit of a bummer and a downer, but it's if you're into this whole thing about what's going on with Chelsea, it's definitely worth reading. We've tweeted that out as well.
And, you know, a little side note to that, too, is that when Newcastle was recently bought by the nation state, and we're all speculating how they will become or they will join the group of the big five, I guess, now. Maybe they'll just become part of the big five and one of the big five will drop out, that being Chelsea.
Maybe, yeah.
And then, you know, we'll have the same amount of big five teams.
Yeah, I'm with Lars. Somebody's going to buy this thing at a relatively cut rate now and be able to run it well,
yes.
And Chelsea will survive.
It's the guy that owns the Dodgers and the Lakers, that and him and another.
It's not the guy that owns the Jets.
No,
you know that initially the guy that owns the New York Jets,
yes,
was
that,
in
or
on,
very early yes. on that when it was like $3.2 billion, whatever. So yes, they would perhaps run it efficiently. You can run it efficiently like Liverpool is run, which is good.
Right.
Or you could run it efficiently like United and Arsenal and Spurs. Those are run pretty efficiently too. And those fans sometimes, you know, they complain a little bit that, you know, they don't get all the players they want because they're run a little too efficiently. So that's the new reality for Chelsea, is that their club will now probably start spending money like a big club, like Arsenal, like Spurs, but not like City and Chelsea of yesteryear. That's the difference. And you can run a club well and get a trophy like Liverpool, but it's a lot harder to do it. You don't have those big bucks.
You know, just to pull the curtain back a little bit for the P1 in the previous segment when Lars threw out that big chunky piece of praise about how Liverpool should be the model for all things run, Andy was doing fist pumps and high fives to himself here in the studio.
He's extremely biased. I also got a certain finger shown at me from a certain producer that roots for the other team from Liverpool. That is in a relegation battle, by the way. I didn't know if we had mentioned that. Should we talk about that?
We
later?
Should. Okay. Well, we can talk about it now because things got heated up today in that area because Brentford won their second game in a row for the first time in a long time by beating Burnley.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Eriksen, once again, with a nice little display of his skill.
Player of the game.
Yeah, I told you when they signed him, could he be the difference that they needed to make sure that they survived relegation this year? And so far, so good.
Yes, right. So,
especially because nobody wants to beat him up.
You know, like part of the deal was that the goal they scored, that first goal they scored, was a cross of his, right?
Right.
But he was given a little bit too much space. And like when you're watching the replay, you're wondering, are they not going in hard because it's him? No, you can't. You can't be thinking like that, right?
Maybe they're just worried that he'll turn and beat them into a better position, and that's
right.
why they don't want to give a little bit extra space.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
If you had to choose only one to not get relegated from the three teams I'm going to give you, and really it'd probably be one team will get relegated and two will be saved. So who would you choose the one to be relegated? Everton, Burnley, or Leeds? If you a rooting interest, not who you think, but one of those three teams is going down.
Wait,
we're assuming Norwich. Let's assume Norwich and Watford will go down, and there's one spot.
Who I want to go down, or who I think will go down?
Who you want? Who out of these three teams? Two do you want saved? Everton, Burnley, or Leeds?
Oh, the team that I want to go down, and I'm sorry, because he's going to be mad at me for saying this, is Burnley. Sorry, Josh.
Oh, see, that's why you're rooting against Josh. How he's like taken on that team.
I know. But here's the thing. Burnley is a club that does not play a style of soccer that I like. And at some point, I think it behooves this league to move out the low block, old style boot and kick soccer.
Because you really
England.
Enjoy how Everton plays.
At least somebody does.
Okay, that's a fair shout. Sorry. I only say this because Burnley has been closer to this before multiple times, and Everton hasn't in this same way. I mean, Everton hasn't been relegated since the 50s, back in the previous century. Leeds is its own thing. One, because now they got an American coach, and I just don't want to see that befall the fate of Jesse Marsh, although after his second game, they didn't look anywhere near as good as they did in the first game. No. And for all of those who were wondering why I was so upset that he took this job, now you probably begin to understand why, because I don't know if he can fix this. I don't know if anybody can fix it.
Well, tomorrow, huge, huge game. Big game. Might be their biggest game of the year.
Yeah, tomorrow's game is of significance, which is Leeds hosting Norwich. And Norwich is a big mess. And, you know, Norwich, there are significant percentages. I just watched them play midweek. I can't even remember who I was watching them play against. Who did they lose to this week? Who was it, Sam? They played them midweek. Who did Norwich lose to midweek? And I watched. And
Villa.
Villa.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there were, I mean, there were literal, like, they gave up that first goal. And
Coutinho, right?
And yes, and Norwich is so bad, it took them all of about 45 seconds to almost give up another goal right off the kickoff because they're just not good. And all their players look like they've lost all confidence. And it's, you know, they know they're going down. It's just it's a bad deal.
Well, we need Leeds to take home the 3 points. Sorry, Norwich fans, but, you know, we don't want Marsh to...
Well, it is a race. Look, Everton, the idea that Everton could get relegated with the number of quality players they have on that squad doesn't make any sense to me. But Frank Lampard has a reputation, and I think people are a little worried that he is going to screw that up. And I don't know, man.
What's the reputation?
Just that he that when things go bad, he starts to throw his players under the bus. He does kind of the Mourinho thing, and then the locker room turns a little bit sour, which is maybe part of what we're seeing at Everton.
That's from his Chelsea days. That's where that
just
comes.
Yeah. Kind of the running bit, okay. Yeah. And so now maybe he's he may not have been the right guy. Not that there was a really good option at the time for that. I have no idea how this is going to finish. I just know that when I saw the table after Burnley lost today, I rubbed my hands together maniacally and said, this is going to be fun because this is good for a radio show that talks the Premier League to have a solid relegation battle on our hands.
It's going to be fun. I have mixed feelings about Everton going down. And part of me wants them to stay.
Don't want to lose the Merseyside Derby year in and year out twice a year.
Or the easy 6 points also. Yeah, that's part of it.
Man, you are a jerk.
So I know. That
wrong,
was just
though.
For Sam. Sorry,
man.
Sam. I don't mean that.
What?
I don't
so
mean
cute.
That. Look, looking at a little bit of a change of heart for me because I was the one that brought Liverpool math up, right? And nobody believed in Liverpool making a race out of this. And it is a race now. But now I've looked at the schedules of both teams. City and Liverpool.
Oh.
City has an easier schedule.
Yes.
We must say this.
City
and
may...
I looked at Liverpool's schedule. It's not easy.
No.
So it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult for Liverpool to win this one out.
See, now I think you're just
sandbagging. No, he's going the other way.
What are you doing?
Today, after the game, which they won easily,
okay.
I went and looked
Hold
at the
on.
Schedules.
Okay,
because they're tied. They're tied on games, and Liverpool's three back, better goal difference, and Liverpool gets to play City.
City's remaining games: away Burnley, the home game against Liverpool, which may be the difference there. Away Wolves, home Watford, away Leeds, home Newcastle, away West Ham, home Aston Villa.
Come on,
Liverpool.
Breeze.
Home Watford.
Okay.
Away Man City.
Wait, who's their next game? You skipped their next game.
Who?
Wednesday. At Arsenal.
Who, City?
No, you're talking Liverpool now.
Yes.
At Arsenal,
oh,
Wednesday.
Oh, that's not in this list. Okay. So
at Arsenal.
Okay, at Arsenal.
Okay.
Okay.
Home Watford, okay.
Right. And then they got City.
Yes, right.
Okay. Then they got at Aston Villa.
Difficult game.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Okay.
Home against Everton. There's your free 3 points
yeah,
you just
fine.
Talked
yes,
about.
Yes, okay.
Away Newcastle.
Not easy. Not easy. Right?
Home.
Nation state now.
Home Tottenham.
Not easy. You experienced that today, right?
You told me my team spanked them.
Yeah, that was kidding aside.
Oh, now he's kidding, Sam.
No.
Away Southampton.
Eh.
And home Wolves.
That's a neat story.
Okay.
They have a tougher schedule. Come on.
Yes, I will agree. Well, what I think makes it tougher is the away game at City. That's the...
Sure.
You both could run the table.
Yeah.
Right?
And we still have to
go
there.
And you still have to go...
And win.
And win at City.
We can't
that's
tie.
Really what makes the big difference.
Who does City play, by the way? Who do they play tomorrow?
I think they play Monday, is it?
Oh, that's right. You're right. Yes.
Yeah, they've
they
got
play
a,
Monday.
Yeah, they play Monday at Palace.
Yeah.
So that's a big game for them.
That's not a gimme either. Palace is tough at home.
No, no. Now, tomorrow, like I said, there is the lineup. There is the, again, the aforementioned Chelsea hosting Newcastle. That's... Such a weird turn of events considering the story. Everton is hosting Wolves. Wolves is in their own thing. The Leeds-Norwich game is also at 9 o'clock. Southampton hosting Watford. West Ham is hosting Aston Villa. That might be the most interesting game other than this one, and we haven't spent enough time. Arsenal hosting Leicester City. Arsenal now has four games in hand. They're only 5 points behind United for that fourth place spot, but four games in hand, albeit some of those are tough.
Yeah, they've got two of those are
tough. Tottenham and is it Liverpool or Chelsea?
No, Chelsea, I think.
Yeah. So Arsenal doesn't have the easiest road to hoe in terms of that. But if you look at their final schedule outside of those two makeup games, they actually have the easiest remaining schedule in the league.
They'll finish top four. I think they'll beat United out in the end. Sorry, Peter, but
I think I agree with you, and they've got a. You know, as a United fan, there is a lot of things to look at with what and how Arteta has done what he's done at Arsenal. As long as, for the people who have been patient and allowed Arteta to do what he's wanted to do, I think it's starting to pay off. There's a lot of young, good talent on that team. Odegaard, Partey, Smith Rowe, Saka. I mean, there's a lot of really good, fun young talent that I like to watch in that team, despite not liking Arsenal as a club.
And that's why they were inconsistent earlier.
No, but there's almost no scenario in my head where they don't end up as the fourth place team at this point.
They'd really have to screw up big time.
Right. Or go through some sort of weird injury spate or something like that. Because they also don't have to deal with all the other, you know, other tournaments and stuff.
Right.
They've just got this to focus on and only this.
Yep.
So
it's
good stuff. All right. We're running really late. All right. When we come back, we're going to turn the eyes towards Germany. We're going to talk to Tyler Kern and end up talking about the U.S. men's national team's nervous end of March here next on The Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sport Radio 1310 and 96.7, whatever that proper order is. Oh, by the way, brought to you by Soccer 90. Hi, I'm Peter. He's Andy. Andy, we need to check in on one Ricardo Pepi, one young man we're all concerned about who took his skill sets and his game all the way over to Germany.
The $20 million man.
And it doesn't appear to be going very well for the young dude. And so to check in on that and how that relates to U.S.-Mexico, live via the internet, our good friend Tyler Kern. Tyler Kern, come in.
Hello, hello. Hey, guys.
How you doing, Tyler?
Man, I'm doing so good. I'm doing so good. It's good to hear from you guys.
How
it's
good to talk to you.
So good.
Okay. It's weird. Clearly, we did not practice. Okay, Tyler,
no, we did not.
We did not practice. We haven't talked to you in a while. So, Tyler, we specifically wanted to ask you first about, because you are our Bundesliga expert. You watch this league religiously. You know everything about it there is to know. at least that's what you told me when you applied for this job.
Sure. Yeah.
What is going on with Ricardo Pepi and Augsburg?
Yeah, it's the same kind of stuff that we've talked about in the past, right? Is that Augsburg's not a very good team, especially on the attacking end. And look, so that's to put it bluntly, right? Ricardo Pepi was never going to fix all of their problems. But he did not get off the bench in their last match in the Bundesliga. Their game today against Mainz was postponed due to COVID cases over on Mainz. And so Augsburg's head coach, you know, said recently, look, he's doing all the work defensively that we're asking him to do. It's a new league. We need to keep in mind that he's a player that, you know, would typically be on a youth team. You know, he's part of that age group and that sort of thing. He's doing everything we need him to do, and we think that at some point it's going to happen for him. And so, you know, the coach kind of said some other coach speak, you know, like, I don't really care who starts. It's the person who scores that is the most important striker at any given time. So, I mean, not much has changed for Ricardo Pepi, which I think is the problem. We all hope that something, he will break out in some way, shape, or form or something along those lines, and that just hasn't happened up to this point. And so, I think you know, kind of like you led in with, Peter, that does cast some doubt on who exactly do you go with in a big USA-Mexico game coming up towards the end of the month.
All right, before we get into US-Mexico, the question I kind of want to understand about Pepe's situation is because I'm not watching him on the regular, the Augsburg games, although in the amount of minutes that I have watched it, it's clear to me that part of Ricardo's problem is the rest of his team is just not very good. But as you've watched him more than I have, is he missing opportunities that are provided to him? Is he not creating enough of his own opportunities? Or is it just simply he's just not getting the service?
From what I've seen, he's just not getting the service. He's just not getting those types of opportunities, right? He's the kind of striker who's not going to create his own shot. Like, he's not going to have like three step overs and then beat a guy, you know, and that's never really been his game, right? He's always been a guy who pops up at the right spot in the box, and if you put the cross in, he's going to find a way to get on the end of it, that sort of thing. The fact of the matter is that Augsburg didn't create a lot of chances before Ricardo Pepi arrived, and that hasn't changed since Ricardo Pepi got there. And so I don't know how necessarily that can change. And we even pointed out a few, maybe a couple months ago, that there were runs that he was making and his teammates just didn't feed him the ball in those situations. And it was really frustrating to watch, but you kind of wondered, have they just not had a striker that makes these kind of runs? Is this team just not set up for a striker that kind of plays the way Pepi plays, that kind of pop up right place, right time in the box kind of guy? And that I think is maybe the most concerning element of it, is that I don't think it's something that Pepe himself can fix necessarily.
Yeah, I find it very confusing because, you know, I don't think I had to be a guy here in Dallas watching him week in and out to know what kind of player Pepe is. And I would assume Augsburg scouts could pick up on that pretty quickly. And the fact that they spent $20 million and frankly overpaid for him to get him, and not have an understanding of how he may not fit into their team, just seems really weird to me. Like, I'm missing part of the story, or maybe they just assume they'd get him now and they'll fit him into a better team somewhere in the future, I guess. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
I suppose so. You know, we see puzzling team construction all the time. Teams buy players without a great idea of how they're going to fit in. You know, you could think of a dozen examples in the Premier League of ways that this happens on a pretty regular basis. Like, I don't think United had any real idea of how Donny van de Beek fit into their team when they got him, right?
Ouch, Tyler, so, like, ouch.
Just to pick a random example out of nowhere, example.
Go
purely.
To one, Tyler. Jerk.
But you know, I don't think that this would be unique to Augsburg by any means. But it is strange that they like doubled their previous transfer record to get him without really an idea of how he fit into the team and how he made how they play right now better.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's pivot to something you mentioned a little bit ago, which is coming up a week from Thursday, the 24th. Is the first of the final three-game window for World Cup qualifying for the United States, and it starts with a trip to the Azteca in Mexico City, US-Mexico. And, you know, probably 6 weeks ago or so, I was feeling like the odds of the US qualifying for the World Cup was running somewhere up north of 85%. Now, with Weston McKennie's injury, the injuries to Matt Turner and Stefan, the two goalkeepers, and with the striker situation with Ricardo Pepi, man, I got to tell you, I am very 50-50 now on the U.S. qualifying directly for the World Cup. And I guess that's kind of where I wanted to lead into this, is Pepi kind of burned out at this point, and is Berhalter going to have to find somebody else to play that role?
I think that's a great question. If you look at the striker pool for the U.S. men's national team, right, you've got guys like Ricardo Pepi, but then also let's throw in there Josh Sargent, Jossie Zardes, even Jordan Pefok, and Jesus Ferreira. I think the only guaranteed call-up at this point, it feels really weird to say, is probably Jesus Ferreira, right? Because he's the only guy that really gives you something different, that kind of false nine look. All the other guys, you probably just take the hottest player at any given time, right? You ride the hot hand, and so if it's, you know, if Sargent scores three goals between now and then, which is not going to happen, then call up Sargent. If it's Pefok, then call up Pefok. But I kind of think at this point it's almost nailed on that it's going to be Jesus Ferreira probably at the Azteca, which is wild to think about, right?
So Ferreira is competing with Pepi for the 9 jersey on the U.S. national team is what you're saying, and he's beating him out.
I think so. It's more of a stylistic thing, right? Like Ferreira plays the way that Berhalter wants to play for that, you know, for someone playing in that number 9 role. He wants to have that kind of false 9 guy the way that he's playing right now for FC Dallas.
You're
and
not
so to
make
me
Peter
anyways,
happy with that cuz I don't think Peter believes in him playing that night, but I think he's done well with the national team in that position.
I think so too.
Yeah. All right, Tyler, am I being overly nervous you know, PTSD 2018 US nutcase fan, or am I legitimately, do I legitimately have a reason to worry about the U.S.'s chances of qualifying for Qatar?
I think you're overreacting. I think we all have a collective case of PTSD, just a little bit.
To me, the worry is...
And I mean
is,
that respectfully for those who actually have real PTSD.
To me, the worry is Weston McKennie, because he, in that last window, bossed the midfield. I mean, he was the man. And who replaces him? I mean, I guess it won't even be Acosta, because he's the holding man replacement. So who?
I don't know. It could be De La Torre. It could be
Moussa and De La Torre playing together. I guess in front of
there's several different people that could play that position. But who will play it as well as McKennie? At least, I mean, the problem in my mind, and the reason why we're talking about this now, is we're not going to be on next week in the lead up to the game against Mexico. So I wanted to get this off my chest, and I'm sure Andy did too. is the fact it's the lineup of the three games, and the fact that you're now trying to make sure that you stay ahead of Panama and Costa Rica, because there is a scenario where even if the United States beats Panama in that second game, if Costa Rica does a three-game run of 9 points, they actually pass you for that third-place position, and the U.S. would still have to do the Oceania play-in game, which is, I think, you want to avoid, which is a one-game knockout in Qatar in the middle of June, by the way.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. To me, it feels really unlikely that happens, right? I think first of all, 4 points mathematically and you're in, right? Like, because that would require you to take points off of, you know, either Mexico or Costa Rica in the form of a win, and so you pretty much take points off of them and you're in, right? You don't really go into the Azteca with too much to lose, I don't think, because I don't know that you're banking on points in the first place.
They've never won in the Azteca against.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, you go in, and if you get a draw, that is just absolute money. If you get any points out of the Azteca whatsoever. But if you get 4 out against Panama and Costa Rica, then you're in. If you beat either of those teams, then the likelihood of either of the other teams running the table and knocking you down to 4th is also really unlikely.
Okay.
I don't know. I just don't think mathematically it's super duper likely that any of those teams run the table, right? Panama also has Canada this window. Costa Rica also has Canada.
Tyler,
we can rely on Andy's guys.
Tyler, was it mathematically likely that they wouldn't make the 2018 World Cup when they had to, like, get 3 points in 3 games or something?
Look.
Oh, well, okay, look, here's a couple of things. We are relying and counting on the Canadians doing some favors for us. Like, any points the Canadians collect in this window benefit the United States. But we said at the very beginning of the onset of this deal, the one thing you didn't want to have happen is go all the way to that last game in Costa Rica and have it mean something. And almost certainly, by the time we get to that game on the 30th, which is a Wednesday, by the way, that game is going to mean something, and I think I'm correct in saying is not only have the U.S. ever not won a World Cup qualifier in Costa Rica, have they even tied in Costa Rica in a World Cup qualifier?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Costa Rica?
That's a very good question. I don't have that.
It hasn't been a lot.
I'm still with Tyler. I still think win against Panama, and things look really good because of all the other stuff that has to happen for that not to be good enough.
Look, yeah, I'm with Andy because, look, you have a four-point gap on Panama and a five-point gap on Costa Rica for a reason. I don't – it would be one thing if this were the Costa Rica of 6-7 years ago, right, and Brian Ruiz were still, you know, in his maybe early 30s as opposed to late 30s, and they had some other players that kind of scared you. I don't feel that way about Costa Rica anymore. Not that going there is going to be easy. I just don't I cannot see a scenario where Costa Rica rolls through Canada, El Salvador, and the United States all in a window and gets 9 points.
Okay.
I mean, maybe look, I'm probably inviting just hellfire down upon myself for this. But like I don't see that. You look at Panama's schedule, Honduras, and then at the United States, you know, playing in Orlando, and then Canada. Again, like I just don't see either of those teams coming out with all 9 points from this window. 9 points, as we've seen, is really, really hard to get. I think only Canada has done that recently. Mexico has the easiest road here.
Absolutely. Mexico has the easiest road. Canada only needs like a point to seal their fate, and then they're done, and they don't have to worry about anything. Tyler, I think what we've learned is in this particular segment is my soccer sphincter is way tighter than yours at this point, because I am highly nervous about the outcome of this. But we'll talk more about it when we come back. We'll have a show the Saturday between the Mexico and the Panama game. So... We can chat up about it again then. All right, Tyler Kern, the great Tyler Kern, thank you for your quick, brief Ricardo Pepi Bundesliga injection of knowledge, sir.
Of course. Always good to talk to you, boys. Thank you again.
Thanks, sir. All right, when we come back, FC Dallas has a big game tonight and may be introducing a hot new starlet. We'll talk about that next here on The Kick Around. We'll talk a little bit about that amazing PSG-Real Madrid Champions League game that took place midweek here before the end of the show. But first, tonight, 7:30 up in Frisco at Toyota Stadium, Football Club Dallas plays their second home game of their so far three-game season. And I think tonight you can safely say will be the debut either off the bench or potentially as the starter of one Alan Velasco, the hot 19-year-old Argentinian winger that Dallas spent a record amount in a transfer fee, record for them at least, of almost $8 million. And the kid, by all accounts, is the real deal. Like, if you're thinking Dallas doesn't spend and never brings in, you know, the next level type of player and is only counting on the kids from their own school, nope, this is that situation that maybe we've all been hoping for a while, and tonight we'll get our first look at him.
Yeah, and I think you have to feel good about things if he's a real deal, right? And you stick him into this kind of front formation that they have, that lineup, and you add him to Areola, who is playing on the other wing. And mm-hmm. Ferrer, I know you don't like him as the false nine, but I think you have to feel pretty good about Dallas's ideal 11. Like this lineup, I think what we see tonight is going to be their ideal 11, like what we want their lineup to be week in and week out throughout this season. And I think you have real skill and acumen from the wingers. You have a nine that can bag some goals. He's historically scored, Jesus Ferreira. He hasn't yet this season, right? But he will. You have a midfield with lungs, a good young midfield, and you have a solid, if not unspectacular, back line, but a good back line. I think you have your ideal 11 is a competitive lineup that can be competitive this season. The problem is the season is not played with 11. It's played with 25, and the depth is the problem. And so, you know, then you're talking about what happens if one of these three young kids in the midfield get injured, get tired. It's a long season. What happens if Velasco and Areola get tired? Then your depth is,
well,
Obreon.
Right. So,
right? And that's where we run into problems.
So if you had any questions about how good or bad the team was over the course of the first two games, the real benefit of Velasco is the addition by subtraction. Not only are you getting the benefits of a young, really high-level player in Velasco, you're taking Jaider Obrion off the field.
Right.
And in my mind, that is a major plus for the team. I do think Obrion can be a benefit as an agent of chaos late in a game, because that's just kind of his game, is running really hard.
Disruptor?
And chasing and being a agent of chaos.
Both of your plays and their plays.
Well, you hope it's more theirs than yours, but yes. But also, the other critical component of Velasco is how he impacts Jesus Ferreira's season. Mm-hmm. Because as a false nine, the qualities of your two players on either side of you are so critical to your success, because those guys are running in behind you, you're playing with them, that now that you've got a guy that can really play some football in Alan Velasco alongside another guy that's already good on his side of the field in Paul Areola, or Pauly Nips, which is the new nickname given to him by Dan Crook, by the way, which is kind of awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for that to be on a T-shirt. Is something to really get excited about. Do I think Dallas is a contender for MLS Cup this season? No.
No.
But I do think that they will be, and they have the ingredients to be, an entertaining, fun team, pending they don't have a lot of injuries because of the thinness of the roster that you just mentioned.
Yeah, but you do like the 11 then, the starting 11. I do. I think it's a sexy lineup. I really do.
Let me say this. In the first two games, if there's been one thing that I've enjoyed more than anything else that has made me happy, surprisingly, is Marco Farfan, the kid they traded Ryan Hollingshead
for. The left back.
He is really, really good.
Yeah.
I miss Ryan. Ryan provided some attacking punch, but Farfan is a fantastic defender.
Mm-hmm.
And based on how this coach, Nico Estevez, is coaching the team and running it differently than Lucci was, that was a really, really smart decision on their part.
Yeah.
I really like him quite a bit.
Yeah, and going to the false nine point that you make about Ferreira, and you don't like him playing the false nine, I actually think he's a good false nine. He does come back and hold the ball.
You're missing my point.
Okay.
I'm not worried about him playing the false nine as an individual. I'm worried that teams that play the false nine tactical formation, that is really difficult to do. And it's not a function of just one player playing that position. It's how it impacts everybody around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't have a true nine, so you have to make up.
Exactly.
Right,
and the only teams globally in the world, in my mind, that really successfully, consistently run a system with a false nine are only a very few number of teams in the world. And just the idea of an MLS team doing it week in and week out just seems a bit far-fetched and dreamy to me.
It's still MLS, though, and competition. It's relative to the competition, and we play in MLS, and I think he might have some.
Yeah, I think after the first two games, my biggest concern, and again, I don't know how much of this is tied to the fact that Obrion is terrible, is their ability to create chances in this 4-3-3 formation. They just aren't creating a lot of chances, and if that is going to be this style of this team, Jesus is going to have to convert the few chances he gets. He missed a really, really good opportunity in that game where were they?
New England.
New England, that would have tied the game late.
Yep. You got to make that if you're the nine.
He's also making $2 million a year.
Exactly. They play Nashville tonight, which right away, really good team. Another good team they're playing. And Nashville is now in the Western Conference. So these kind of games matter just a little bit more, right? Because they affect the standings. And Nashville is considered one of the favorites to win this conference and reach MLS Cup. So it's a good test for the new kid tonight.
Now they are they're on an extended road run because their stadium is getting its final touches. They don't play their first home game for several more games.
The new stadium.
They opened up in Seattle. They won in Seattle. They got a draw in Minnesota last week. So this is their third straight road game. It'll be interesting to see what their legs are like tonight. The weather will be nice. I hope it's a good, decent crowd up in Frisco, 7:30 at Toyota Stadium. We'll see how it goes. And I might be sporting a fancy new shirt that everybody will be excited about at some point. They may have to watch
FC Dallas.
You may have to watch the Twitter account for some photos or something.
No hints.
It may be related to a one-time kicker of footballs for a local college team. A one-off.
Okay, that's a good hint.
If that's, there you go. All right, so Dallas and Nashville tonight. By the way, NYCFC, which plays in the jankiest of all situations at Yankee Stadium, played their first home game at Yankee Stadium today. Remember, they're also the holding MLS Cup holders. They revealed their championship banner in Yankee Stadium, it might be the saddest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
So, small flag, way up in the third tier corner, where out of sight, out of mind.
When you say small,
yeah,
it might be 2 by 3 feet.
Yeah, that's where the Yankees said, you know, you can hang it way up there.
Way up on the third tier, all the way over in the corner.
Oh, my
not,
God. And this is you so, see, I'm looking at it right now. This is incredibly tiny.
Is it not the saddest thing? That is your championship banner.
I'd rather them put nothing up.
They deserve a new stadium, don't they? That's a good club.
Yeah.
They're a good team.
They do. Yeah. It is a mess. They also won today. They beat Montreal 4-1. All right, when we come back, man, it was an exciting Champions League game. PSG, Real Madrid, we discuss it next here on The Kick Around.
Yeehaw!
Look at us, Andy, getting through another two-hour spectacular episode of The Kick Around with one final segment.
What a segment.
It will be. By the way, Andy and I have posted our official kick-around statement on the matter of the Austin FC banner that has been posted for the last 2 years in the Ticket Studio that caught a bit of internet noise this week. So you can find that on our Twitter account, at The Kick-Around. And we will say nothing else about the matter. Next on the docket... Did you see the news this week that season 3 of our beloved Ted Lasso began shooting?
All right.
And the bigger news is that Nike has cut a deal to be the
official kit sponsor.
Kit sponsor of Richmond AFC.
Yeah.
And they are getting one of my favorite, at least it appears from the sneak peek, one of my favorite soccer kit designs, which is the two-panel shirt.
What's that?
Two panels, like, half and half, like the old Blackburn Rovers jerseys.
Yeah.
Half red, half blue.
Yeah, okay.
Right down the middle.
Right. Old school.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
That was a big-time look in the late 70s.
It was.
Yeah.
You and I need to have a conversation about being an adult wearing sport jerseys with and without, with your name and number on it, or an actual player name and number on it.
Or how about neither? Just that's an option, right?
Or the option is not to do it. Like, do you think that you should not be
jersey.
Doing it? Or a jersey with nothing on
it. Yeah,
that's
what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could do that too.
I'm at our age, I opt for the jersey with nothing.
So you, okay, but being our age, and we're in our 50s,
yeah.
young 50s, yes. you would still wear a jersey to a game.
Yeah.
Okay, because sure. I'm always fascinated by people that are like, oh, no, that's for people that are, like, under the age of 21.
No, you can wear it. No, come on. Who says that? Who made up this rule?
There are a lot of people that feel very strongly about that.
Like, what about national team? You can't wear your national team's jersey?
I'm telling
you,
man.
You're, like, over the age of 40?
This applies to sports of all... This isn't just specific to soccer.
Oh,
I've seen people talk about it, about baseball, football, hockey. Like... I'm surprised people say this because I swear I see people of all ages wear hockey sweaters all
right.
the time.
Yeah, it's how you sport your team's colors in hockey. You just wear the traditional sweater.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of understand that you may have a mental block about wearing a jersey with a player's name and number.
Yeah, I think if you're a kid, that's great. You wear your hero's jersey.
Right. But if I wanted to wear my TEDx jersey,
yeah, then
is that a little too weird?
Yeah, then
that's
yeah.
weird.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
If I wanted to wear my Paxton Pomacall,
yeah,
long sleeve, right. gray and white, hooped.
Yeah. I think just the plain jersey, I think, is the way to go when you're a full grown adult.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't have a Carl. You don't have a Vidal.
I do, but I don't wear it.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe if I'm playing soccer, I'll wear it. But I don't sport it out like that. But you know, I'll wear the Chilean national team jersey, the plain one, to watch Chile play in front of the TV.
Fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you wear the US kit?
I do. I have several different kits, but my favorite one, which is the one with the racing car stripe down the left side from 98, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite design of all time. And I wear that during games when I'm watching it, and I'll even wear it out in public, too.
Okay.
Like, if you go to a U.S. game, I would wear that jersey for sure. But there is no name and number on it either.
Is this rule that some people have about wearing a jersey, you can't do it if you're older than a certain age? Is that true also for, like, sweat tops and, like, other
No, it's specific to jerseys.
To the jersey.
It's not... It's,
the uniform. Like, the team uniform,
At some point, I think these people believe, believe that you should graduate from wearing jerseys to something like hoodies or pullovers or t-shirts or something a little less.
Because a hoodie, that's a very, you know, 50-something, like a 50-something adult, hoodie is kind of the way to go. I see.
I can't explain it either. Okay. All right. So we were blessed with Champions League fun this week. The game goes back to Madrid. It is PSG and Real Madrid, the return leg. PSG scored late. Mbappe scored an amazing goal in Paris to go to Spain with a 1-0 lead.
And there's no away goal rule now.
Thank God.
Why?
You can cram that rule up your nose.
I like the away goal rule. Anyway, so now it doesn't matter. Now it doesn't matter. All PSG has to do is tie.
Right.
And if they lose by one goal, no matter the score, it'll get sent to extra time.
It'll go to extra time.
Right.
And it was poised nicely. It was a interesting battle. They're working on the stadium that Real Madrid plays in. That's why a bunch of the seats were...
Bernabeu.
The Bernabeu. That's why a bunch of the seats were covered up, and they're not done with it, I guess, at this point, if I understand the story correctly. Anyway.
So limited capacity.
PSG and Mbappe have a couple of opportunities early in the game.
They have a couple. They have several.
Okay. I was trying to be nice because we're going to end up making PSG fans really angry by the end of this.
No, I mean,
They had several opportunities just to close this game out.
And Mbappe was phenomenal.
Yes. But in the most PSG of ways. Go ahead.
Mbappe scores.
Yes. Oh, right. Yes.
So
yes,
they
yes.
even go up 1-0 in that game. So now they're up 2-0 on the aggregate.
Yes, that's right. I had forgotten how this.
So out of these million opportunities to score, Mbappe actually scored one
and makes it 2-0.
Celebrates in front of his future fans, by the way.
Yes, because that is the weirdest part of this story. Is Real Madrid in this weird position of getting knocked out by Mbappe single-handedly, but they know they're going to get him next season, which is a weird thing.
Yeah, they're going to buy him.
And he was amazing. He's so fast. I don't know how anybody, a human being, runs with the ball as fast and as controlled as he does.
While they're running roughshod over Madrid, and they have all these opportunities, Mbappe's going nuts. Several of their players are playing well. There's one player, and it's not Neymar, who we... not seen a lot of, and it's kind of largely absent from this game, right?
Yeah. There was a moment in the game, and I think it's when we all began to ask the question, where if you were watching Twitter at the same time as the game, it wasn't just one or two, but 10 or 12 or 15 different soccer journalists all at about the same time essentially tweeted the same tweet, which is Messi still in this game?
Oh. Wow.
It was weird. Yeah. Because you were thinking
that.
It,
yes,
I was
right,
thinking it, they were all thinking it, and it was really obvious that he had just kind of evaporated from the game, which is its own thing. Ancelotti made a change. He took Kroos off. He put on Camavinga, which gave them a little extra energy.
And it allowed Modric also, it gave him a little bit, the ability to free up a little bit, and he started bossing midfield. And
by
then,
the way, that moment in that game where Modric chases down Messi and slide tackles the ball away
to save a goal.
And tumbles Messi at the same time.
Yeah.
That clean tackle, totally fair. Messi wasn't upset, but Modric chasing down Messi and cleanly tackling the ball away and Messi going for a tumble and then popping back up, that was that's good stuff right there.
So, yeah, Modric was very good in midfield, and he allowed these plays to then develop that led to
the first one is Donnarumma, who is the goalkeeper, the Italian goalkeeper playing for PSG.
Yeah, but it starts earlier. It starts earlier with some pressure in the midfield.
Okay.
On the side. I forget who the player was for Madrid that started to press them against the side, and that forced them to go back to the keeper in an uncomfortable way, and that led to the dispossession.
Would Keylor Navas have just cleared the ball away?
No, of course not.
No, yeah, he would have just cleared the
he
ball away.
He wouldn't have
jacked with it.
Yeah, because
right.
Donnarumma goofs with the ball and then ends up turning it over, and Benzema scores his first goal to make it 2-1.
Okay, now stop there. It's 2-1. PSG is still in control.
Yep.
They can even give up another goal, and it will go to overtime. This is how comfortable they are with the aggregate right now. There was also a foul call on that play. I don't know if you saw it.
There was no foul.
You don't think there was a foul?
No.
I think there was a legit foul call on that.
No.
He put his knee on his thigh, no?
I thought that was a goalkeeper getting caught goofing on the ball and lost it,
okay.
And I thought it was fair play.
Fair enough.
And so the guy storming into the locker room afterwards making a scene, I thought.
Yeah, that came much later after more developments.
Okay, so now it's 2-1. And PSG, this is where this goes from being a lit match to a flaming inferno.
Yep.
Because it doesn't take them, what, how many minutes before the next situation happens?
Minutes.
Yeah.
Literally minutes.
I think the ball is kicked off and ends up back in the PSG end of the field. And it's just this bad moment of miscommunication. And the ball is gifted to Benzema on a crossing run across the face of the goal. And he just slots it in. And now we're at 2-2.
Right. And then, when it was 2-1, you started to think, you know what? PSG suddenly disappeared from this game.
Boy,
when they had to just clamp it down, keep possession, be calm, with three of the biggest superstars in the game in your lineup, they couldn't do that.
Well, you probably know by now, Benzema ends up scoring his hat trick to make the game 3-2, and PSG crumbles again and loses to Real Madrid. They are out of the Champions League.
And part of the story there is when it was 3-2 and they needed a third goal, they didn't have anything.
Okay, so this is where I wanted to ask this question. Is this continuous crumbling in the face of adversity at Champions League, is that not a byproduct of all these amazing players and all this money spent on amazing players not having week in and week out legitimate competition by playing their league games in France?
I think there are many factors. That is one of them. There's a lack of discipline with that team. Always has them because they get away with that because of the league competition.
Because there's just no competition.
And sometimes, like is happening with Fernandes and with Bruno and Ronaldo, you're getting the same kind of effect at PSG just because you have these three superstars. Sometimes it's too much. And they all kind of get in the way of each other, but they all can't fully be 100% of who they are because they're having to make it work with the three of them all there. And
yes.
I think this is a product of maybe it's just too much. Maybe two of those guys, but all three on the same team.
It does beg the question, if PSG actually spent less money and had less of a big name set of players, would they actually not end up being a better team?
We would have taken them to
because they'd have to try harder in Ligue 1.
Right.
And it would translate better when they get in these situations. Because I don't know how many years in a row now we're looking at PSG farting their Champions League dreams
in epic
away.
Epic ways.
In epic. And then while Lionel Messi just disappeared. By the way, they said Lionel Messi didn't last like less than 10 seconds on the field by the time the whistle blew. He was gone.
He missed a PK in the first leg, too, by the way, which would have been
good.
Indeed a help.
Good amount.
Yep.
But boy. Unless you're a PSG fan, as a neutral, that was fantastic soccer watching. Good stuff. All right, good luck to Dallas tonight. Hope to see you up in Nashville. If you see us, please say hello. Thanks to Jacob for doing tickers. Thanks for Sam for producing. Thank you to EA for running the board. P1s, you know it. We love and adore you. Get stuck in and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.